something that I said early on but did not repeat in both the other preceding oral arguments is Justice Bruner is participating. She's just doing it remotely. So she will participate in our conference today and deciding these cases fully. But thank you, counsel, for agreeing to be here today. This is 2022-1047 in the matter of the State of Ohio versus Donald Bertram. On behalf of the appellant, Mr. Hirsch. Good morning.
Morning. Chief Justice Kennedy, and may it please the court, Max Hirsch on behalf of Donald Bertram, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal, please. In a burglary prosecution, the force, stealth, or deception element refers to how a trespasser gains entrance into or remains in a structure. For that reason, Ohio courts have consistently held that a person's unforced entry into an open, attached garage during the daylight does not satisfy this separate element.
Counsel, you're not arguing that your client did not commit a crime on the day in question?
Correct.
What crime did he commit?
Well, he committed trespass as a lesser included of burglary, and he committed misdemeanor theft as well.
Anything else?
Not that I've thought of, no.
Okay.
But I would concede those.
All right, thank you.
And because the state has not alleged that...
And because he committed the lesser included offense, if we agree with you, what's the remedy?
This court could modify the conviction to trespass and remand for resentencing on that offense.
Okay.
Because there was no allegation of force here, the state had to provide sufficient evidence that Mr. Bertram trespassed by stealth or deception. But even viewing the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, he did not. Since the briefing here largely focuses on deception and the applicability of Biddlecom, I will begin there. The trespass by deception occurs when a person is granted permission to enter a structure under false pretenses. This occurs when a person lies about their identity or about why they wish to enter, and someone in the house allows them in.
Well, the state says you've got a stealth element here because your client was smiling at the homeowner.
Well, I take that to be more as to deception because Mr. Huff did not know what Bertram's... Yes.
Right, I did mean deception, not stealth. Correct.
Yes, fair enough. Mr. Huff did not know what Mr. Bertram was going to do, and be that as it may, though, that does not describe how Mr. Bertram accomplished his entrance into the garage. Mr. Bertram could have sprinted and looked frantic, and that may have meant something else to Mr. Huff, but he still would have entered the garage the same way, which is through the door that was open. And in Biddlecom, which the state relies on and the court below relied on, the 8th District in dicta anticipated that perhaps there could be a situation where a person's conduct and demeanor makes it seem as if they have permission to enter when they in fact do not. But even taking that on face value, its rationale should not apply here. Of course, the general facts of a trespass by deception case do not apply here either, and that's because Mr. Huff at no time granted Mr. Bertram permission to enter the garage, nor at a bare minimum was Mr. Huff deceived into thinking Mr. Bertram had permission to be there. So even if Mr. Huff didn't know what Mr. Bertram's intentions were, that does not mean that Mr. Bertram was permitted into the garage, nor did Mr. Huff think that he was allowed to be
there. What about the conduct of going by the house, some could say maybe casing it out, saw that the garage was open, saw a crime of opportunity to occur, parked away, didn't pull in the driveway and just walk in and take the equipment, put in his car and drive away. He particularly had his car someplace where his getaway or his exit could be easily facilitated, where maybe the car couldn't be identified.
Well, to be sure, there are cases where the stealth element is satisfied by a person casing a block and searching for an unguarded garage, or perhaps where someone knows they're spotted, but they wait until the garage is unguarded before entering. But those aren't the facts here, because it's undisputed that when Mr. Bertram first drove by the house, he and Mr. Huff made eye contact. Mr. Bertram returned to the house anyway. By the time he returned, he parked in front of the driveway, and Mr. Huff could still see him. under those facts, no reasonable fact finder could conclude that Mr. Bertram was searching for an unguarded garage. Perhaps he was searching for a garage that happened to be open, but no reasonable fact finder could think that he was waiting until the structure was unguarded until before he entered.
So what the statute is designed to protect in a burglary, warning, what did Mr. Bertram get, 8 to 12?
Correct. Yeah, the maximum.
All right. So he got a maximum prison sentence on this. And your argument is that the elements of burglary, or the statutory definition of burglary, this is not one of those crimes that definition was designed to protect.
Correct. As several courts have explained, forced stealth and deception is a separate element from trespass, and it refers to how the person gains entrance into a structure. And put another way, that means a person gained entrance by some forbidden means, and Mr. Bertram did not accomplish his entrance into the garage by any of those means.
I've checked the dictionary definition of stealth, and it appears to cover behavior that is designed to avoid detection. Is there any facts that support
no
that?
But, no
smiling but, like you're going to come over and shake his hand and say, oh, what a lovely day, or
well, perhaps that could go. I don't think that would go to stealth, even arguably.
What did Mr. Huff do between the time of the eye contact and the moment that Mr. Bertram drove off?
When Mr. Bertram first drove by and the two made eye contact,
after that.
Right. It appears that Mr. Huff was already suspicious and went back inside his house to
get
his...
So he went inside.
Correct. He went inside to get to retrieve his cell phone, and he was back outside by the time Mr. Bertram returned and parked in front of the driveway. And so turning
would this be a different scenario if Mr. Bertram had entered into Mr. Huff's home, into his house?
If the house was already open, if the door was wide open and he simply walked in, then... I'd be making the same argument, but
if he simply walked in and took a vase or a lamp,
it would be the same argument. Yes, but most cases involving the home, as it plays out in practice, trespass by force can occur with a very minimal act. If a door happens to be unlocked, a person opening that door and going in has used force to gain entrance into the structure. Here, this was an open, attached garage. There were no surrounding circumstances that would have reduced Mr. Bertram's chances of being seen at any point. I want to dig into that a tiny bit more on the stealth point, which is just simply that Mr. Bertram was not searching for an unguarded structure. He did not wait until the garage was unguarded before he entered. And during the trespass, which is how a lot of these cases play out, he did not avoid being seen. He simply walked up the driveway into the garage and left. There was no conduct that would have reduced his chance of being seen. There are cases where courts have interpreted the time of day can play into that because someone may be trespassing at night. They're less likely to be seen under those circumstances, but that doesn't apply here. At least one court has said maybe a secluded location can satisfy that, but again, those aren't the facts here. Unless there are any other substantive questions on those points, I do want to address why this court should not dismiss this case as improvidently allowed. As is apparent from the briefing, a person's unforced entry into an open attached garage is a recurring fact pattern. A majority of courts of appeals in Ohio have addressed this issue in one form or another, but this case fundamentally departs from the rationale of those cases, even cases where sufficient evidence of burglary was found. And so, for the court below to not fully appreciate that these additional facts about Mr. Bertram's cavalier attitude or his smile, the fact that those are not connected to the manner in which he gained entrance to the garage, guidance is needed for the lower courts to be able to understand that crucial point. Because as the holding of the Fourth District stands, essentially, a person would have to be completely, there would have to be no additional facts. A person would have to be completely unobserved, coincidentally, for that to not be a burglary. And additionally, in the lower court's analysis, the court, although it did define stealth and deception separately, those are distinct concepts. And the analytical error, or I guess part of the issue with the analysis of the court below is that it recited these facts that Mr. Bertram drove by, he returned, he walked up with a cavalier attitude, but then it simply explained that, well, this could satisfy stealth or deception, not connecting which facts might satisfy one or the other. And it's clear that these are distinct concepts. And as some of the questioning back and forth here has already revealed today, some facts are more arguably connected to one or the other. So being able to parse those out would provide helpful guidance to lower courts.
I know this is probably not relevant, but where's your client now?
In prison. Yeah.
8 to 12.
Correct.
For this behavior.
Correct. Yeah, I think there might have also been PRC, some kind of supervisory penalty as well on top of that. Unless there are any other questions, I'll reserve the remainder of my time. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Jay Willis on behalf of the Scioto County Prosecutor's Office representing the state. May it please the court. He talked about improvidently allowed. That would be the first argument that the state would make here, is that this case is improvidently allowed
Why?
To review at this time.
Why?
Well, first of all, there's no constitutional issue. There's really no conflict in the districts. There are multiple decisions, as opposing counsel referenced, on various fact patterns, but all of these burglary decisions are fact-driven, very fact-driven, in fact.
Well, but isn't this one particular in that, do these set of facts constitute this crime?
It's a different set of facts, I'll grant you that, but does that mean that every case that's charged with a burglary that has an unusual set of facts should come before this court? Then you'd get nothing else done.
Counsel, the prosecution in this case had wide discretion on what to charge, rightly so, right? They could have taken this set of facts and charged theft and trespass, right?
Correct.
They chose not to. They chose burglary. Now, the legislature put this element of stealth that seems to be an issue. What is the fact that supports stealth? They didn't have to include stealth in the law.
Right. We can see there's no force. They've admitted that there is trespass with an intention to commit the offense.
Okay.
We have stealth and deception here. I think, as Justice Stewart pointed out, with the course of conduct here, first of all, the location where this house is, the record refers to a dead end. It's not technically a dead end. It's called Timlin Hill. It's a hill that is not accessible on a normal route. You would have to intentionally go up this hill and around this hill.
Okay, but you argued in your brief that it was his smile and his cavalier attitude. Now, cavalier, I looked up the dictionary definition of that, plain language, indicates some type of bold behavior. That would seem to be the antithesis of stealth.
I think it can come under stealth or it can come under deception, and I think that's where the Fourth District decision went with that, because that was their term, not mine.
Deception?
The cavalier attitude.
Okay.
But I think it's all part of the course of conduct. Mr. Bertram drove up the hill, turned around at an old monastery, and then casing the joint, as was referenced earlier, then came and parked back slightly away from the garage and then approached the garage. Mr. Huff, I believe, was the victim's name, the homeowner. He went inside, concerned because there aren't many people driving by this home, and the car had a loud exhaust, didn't look like it fit in the neighborhood. The victim went in and retrieved his cell phone and came back out. Then the course of conduct continues, I think, where we get to the stealth and deception. Mr. Huff saw him, they made eye contact, and then Mr. Bertram, who appeared to be under the influence of something, had open lesions all over his body, approached him smiling with a cavalier attitude, as the Fourth District found, as if there's no way he would be coming here to steal anything.
So help me understand. So if someone sneaks in, or is that stealth, under your view, if someone walks straight in and looks someone in the eye and comes takes their stuff, that's stealth. So what would you have to do not to be stealthy?
Well, I don't think I said if they look him straight in the eye.
Well, that's what happened here, right?
But it's his entire course of conduct.
You said he was cavalier. He had scratches on his arm. He looked like he was under the influence of something. I mean, if that's stealthy, then what's not?
Well, again, I think.
I mean, to me, I can't think of anything less stealthy than someone walking up my driveway who has scratches on their arm, looks like they're under the influence or something, looks me in the eye and walks in and takes my leaf blower. I can't imagine would be less stealthy.
If it's
than
not
that.
Stealth, then we would argue that it falls under the deception definition.
What was the deception? That's what I'm trying to find.
The deception was convincing the homeowner that he wasn't going into to his garage to take the leaf blower. He was approaching him for whatever reason, whether it was panhandling, whether it was asking him to make a phone
call. But he walked directly into the garage, from what the record I read.
After I believe that he approached the homeowner and then he passed him right into the garage.
Right.
And the homeowner testified he was so shocked and dismayed at this conduct that he didn't expect.
He saw it all. So, how can it be deceptive?
I think he convinced the homeowner that that Mr. Bertram convinced the homeowner that there's no way he could possibly be doing what he was doing. And
how did he didn't say anything?
No, it was just his cavalier attitude.
Wow! And if he didn't say anything and he made no motions that I could see, read in the record.
Correct.
How did he convey an attitude, whether cavalier or whatever you want to call it?
I believe the jury specifically came back and said that they were at an impasse. The trial judge instructed them that they needed to go back and deliberate. Then the jury came back and asked to listen to Mr. Huff's testimony again. So I think whatever testimony that he gave, that jury, as the fact finder, applied the law and found either stealth or deception. We don't know which it was from the jury, but that's where we ended up with this case.
Let me ask you the same question I asked Mr. Hirsch. So 2911.12a, the definition for burglary here, says no person by force, stealth, or deception shall trespass in a separately secured portion of an occupied structure with the requisite intent. Is this act one that the General Assembly, in drafting the statute, is designed to protect? So it requires force, it requires stealth, it requires deception, and it requires a secured portion of an occupied place. We had an open garage, we had a guy walk right up, walked in, took some equipment, and left. Is this what the statute is designed to protect?
I think so, Your Honor. I think this is an attached garage, and I didn't think that was an issue. That wasn't actually argued below, and I didn't think we were arguing it today. But if it's the attached garage, would it be any different if it were a screened-in porch and he approached the screened-in porch? I don't see the difference.
If the door was open versus closed, is that a distinction that the courts have made in
some drink? Courts and some courts haven't. I think that's part of the issue here. But I don't think that's a conflict in the districts. I think it's just different views by different courts,
That a problem? Whether it's occupied into a secured part of the structure depends on whether the door is open or closed. Might depend on what court you're in and what county you're in Ohio. Isn't that problematic? Shouldn't the law be uniform across the state?
I think that's the legislature's job.
But is it? Is it in our job to interpret what the legislature has said?
Well,
And if some courts are interpreting saying, open doors, not the same as a closed door, and those are judicial decisions, shouldn't ultimately this court decide one way or the other?
I think there's a fine line between judicial interpretation and legislation. And as the Chief Justice said in her introductory remarks, we're here not to make laws. That's the legislature's problem.
Well, but you just said that their laws are made differently depending on what court you're in.
Well, I think part of the problem is that stealth is not defined in the revised code. Your deception is, stealth is not. So I think that may be perhaps where the confusion is in the application in the lower courts.
So we have to apply the plain meaning of stealth because it's undefined, and it seems to depict behavior that is designed to avoid detection. And I'm trying to find, under the facts of this case, any facts that support that argument that he was trying to avoid detection. He just walked in with a smile on his face and took the leaf blower.
We would agree with the Fourth District's decision that stealth, with plain ordinary meaning, would be some secret, sly, or clandestine act effectuating the entry into the garage. And that sly or cavalier attitude, and like I said earlier, the entire course of conduct accomplishes that sly act where he was able to go into the garage without the homeowner stepping in front of him and saying, hey, wait a minute, because he was so shocked and dismayed, he didn't know what to do.
The homeowner already didn't trust, so he's working in the yard, my understanding of the
transcript. And he goes back in and gets his phone.
He goes in and gets his phone because he believes that this gentleman's up to no good.
Potentially.
So where's stealth deception after that?
The stealth argument might be lessened, but I still think it can come in under the Deception Act.
But everybody talks about the smile. A lot of people walking in here today were smiling. Were they deceiving or being stealth?
I didn't observe it, Your Honor. I wasn't there. I didn't observe it.
I'm just trying to understand. Everybody talked about the smile.
It is an intriguing.
Because if so, our security should be on alert.
High alert.
I agree. Come on. This is an interesting fact pattern. I will give you that.
I'm trying to understand it.
Well, I'm going based off of what I know. When I argued this in front of the Fourth District, one of the judges on that panel, he hammered on this smile and the sly attitude.
But I'm trying to understand how you get an attitude without a word spoken or emotion.
I've not been in the situation where I've had somebody come up and approach me and try to enter my home, so I can't speak.
But he kind of walked towards him a little bit, but then he walked straight in the garage, and the owner was already gotten his cell phone.
Right.
Right.
And he started taking pictures as he was leaving with the leaf blower, which he promptly put in the car and didn't shut the door.
And drove off.
With the door open.
So was that the deception or stealth?
I think it's this entire course of conduct. I think was the stealth and the deception.
I think it falls on an open door on his car.
Well, and him coming up, casing the place and driving by and then coming back and parking off to the side of the garage where he knew the homeowner was off working in the yard.
Would you agree didn't do anything deceptive? Except what the homeowner, he didn't announce to the homeowner, I'm coming in to steal your lawn.
Right. There was no announcement of that.
Right. So Would you agree there was nothing deceptive?
I think where we get into the deception piece is you have somebody, and it's almost the opposite side of the coin, where you have somebody pretending to a neighbor that they have the right to go into the home. Yes, I know the homeowner didn't give him, the homeowner is there, he didn't give him permission to go in, but I think his attitude gave the homeowner pause and why is this man here? And he seems like...
But he wasn't wearing like... Waterworks uniform or anything like that. He just walked in and
he just smiled
and did
at
nothing
him
and smiled.
He smiled at him, gave him that smile, and then walked in, grabbed the leaf blower, and then calmly came out and left. The other issue with the application of the burglary statute is I think we need to consider, you know, if this is only a trespass and a misdemeanor theft, we still have somebody entering a home, whether it's an attached garage or like I said, a screened-in porch. And I think there's a public policy component of that the legislature has adopted the burglary statute to protect homeowners for this reason.
And they've put in an element of force, usually, and that could just be just opening the door.
Right.
And in this instance,
the door was open. I understand that. Would have made a difference if this was at night? If the homeowner was out on the porch and he saw him and it was nighttime? I don't know. I don't know. That's something for this court to decide, I suppose. We would argue that there's a fine line between legislation and judicial interpretation, and we would argue that what's being asked here is to have this court redefine things that the legislature has not. If the legislature chooses to go and give us a different definition of stealth, then so be it. But I would argue that this court shouldn't be going that extra step. Maybe some judicial guidance might be helpful to all of us, especially those prosecutors and defense attorneys working in the trenches trying these cases and the trial court judges. But how far should that go? That would be the thing that the state wants to caution here. If there's nothing else, that's all I have.
Thank you, Mr. Willis. Mr. Hirsch, you have 5 minutes and 25 seconds.
I want to start with a point that there's a colloquy between opposing counsel and Justice Stewart about the question of the open door. And I guess insofar as there is a through line in these cases, it's that every court has analyzed the question kind of an already open door the same way, is that if that's merely the facts that a person walks through an open door, that's not trespass by force, stealth, or deception. What happens in cases where courts do find sufficient evidence of burglary is there's some additional fact where someone engages in some conduct where I think it's usually going to be stealth, where they are less likely to be seen. That can be time of day. I mean, it's not an issue before this court how time of day plays into it, but I think every court to have examined the issue of time of day has said that a person's trespass at night is essentially a deliberate decision to do so at a time where they're less likely to be seen, and obviously that's not present here. And as for the open door question, though, the 12th District case that just came out that I submitted as supplemental authority is very illustrative of this, where a person enters a garage through a rotted away door and then I think basically climbs into a crawl space to then enter a house. But what the court there is very specific to say that initial entrance is not where the force, stealth, or deception element is met. It's the manner in which that person continued the trespass into the house, that going into a crawl space could be seen as sufficient evidence of stealth. And again, there's no additional facts like that here. Mr. Bertram entered the garage. He was in for just a few moments. And again, as is apparent in our conversation here, you know, maybe this was a trespass by boldness, maybe a trespass by surprise, but a failure to announce one's intentions does not rise to the level of deception. It is true that Mr. Ruffy kind of couldn't believe what he was seeing, but that does not mean that Mr. Bertram accomplished his entrance or remained in the structure by one of the forbidden means in the statute. And so finally, just the deception element here in a burglary prosecution is connected to permission fundamentally. Someone makes some affirmative misrepresentation and they gain permission to enter the structure. And there may be another situation where a person appears as if they have permission, like Justice Dieter's example about waterworks, or I think about someone posing as a meter reader and then going on and stealing something from a backyard or something like that. Any observer would think that person has the permission of the owner to be there. Mr. Huff, to the extent that he didn't know what was going on, or that even if you want to say he was deceived about Mr. Bertram's intentions, he was not deceived about Mr. Bertram's license or permission to be there. And again, more fundamentally, that does not describe how Mr. Bertram entered the garage.
Even if he announced, "I'm going to go in there and take your leaf blower," is that burglary?
No. No, it would be.
Just saying, I need a leaf blower, and he walks in, takes the leaf blower, and leaves.
Correct. I mean, the perception of what one's intentions are is just simply not relevant, except unless it's a situation where that perception causes the homeowner to allow them in or something like that. But no.
Like, I'm just going to check. I think my son's ball rolled into your garage.
Yeah.
Or, I saw my cat run in there.
Right. There are plenty of examples of this in the case law where someone poses as an exterminator, even though they don't work there anymore. Someone says, "Can I use the bathroom?" Make a phone call. There are real examples of this that are throughout the briefing here. And again, those are.
Was more recently raised about him driving off with the car door open. Does that really matter?
No.
Why not?
I don't think it's connected to any of the elements of the offense. I suppose to the extent you could argue that this was a burglary, I think all the elements would have been satisfied by that point. The offense was completed after, the theft offense was completed after he took the leaf blower. The cavalier attitude had already taken place. So
I can ignore that.
Yeah, that's not relevant, no. Unless there are any other questions, I will waive the remainder of my time and ask this court to reverse.
Thank you.
Thank you.
We'll take the matter under advisement and you'll receive a decision from the court.